Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Political Cesspool radio program. Last night of Confederate History Month 2012, we're going to try to open up the hour with a, as we've been doing each week this month, with a rendition of Dixie or some other closely acquainted Southern song. And do we have that clip ready? And here it is.
I wish I was in the land of cotton, old times there. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland, in Dixieland where I was born, early on one frosty morning, look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray, in Dixieland I'll take my stand to live and die in Dixie, away, away, away down south in Dixie, away.
That's the national anthem, ladies and gentlemen, for the Confederate States of America. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio program. Sadly enough, it's the last Saturday we have with you in the month of April, which means it's the last Saturday we have with you to celebrate Confederate History Month 2012, as April is the officially dedicated Confederate History Month in many southern states, including Tennessee. And so we do our bid here during the third and final hour of each live broadcast of the Political Cesspool during this month to salute and remember the men who fought for the South during the Second War for American independence. And I'm your host, James Edwards. Eddie the Bombardier with me here in studio with me for tonight's broadcast, Saturday, April 28th, coming to you from AM 1380 WLRM Radio. We have covered a lot of ground this month. Of course, when you're talking about commercial radio, you're talking about everything that encompasses those years between 1861, 1865, all the history there. The best we can do in 4 hours worth of radio with commercials, that's really like 3 hours. The best we can do during our on-air tribute to the South is give you a very rough flyover at best. Might enlighten you with a couple of interesting stories you didn't know before, but basically we're just here to do our best. And certainly that's what we've done, to celebrate the men who fought for the South, and in some cases, not just the men. Have you ever heard about the person Winston Smith refers to as the Southern Boadicea? Listen to this. This is an actual letter that was written on June 3rd, 1864. Robert Audrey of Company B, he's a Yankee, the 111th Illinois Infantry. He mailed this letter to his father describing some recent action his unit had seen. Have you read this story, Eddie? Here it is. This is what the Union soldier writes to his father in 1864. Dear father, I take pen in hand to let you know that I am well. We are camped near Dallas, Georgia, where we found the enemy in force on the 26th. The 111th was on the front line of the breastworks, and we drew a hot fire from the Rebs until about 4 o'clock when the enemy viciously charged our works. We poured hot fire into their ranks, and several times their lines broke, but they rallied again and again and came on with guns blazing and flags waving. They fought like demons, and we cut them down like dogs. Many dead and dying secessioners fell prisoner. I saw 3 or 4 dead rebel women in the heap of bodies. All had been shot down during the final rebel charge upon our works. One rebel woman charged to within several rods of our works and was raving the traitor flag and screaming vulgarities at us. She was shot 3 times, but she still came. She was finally killed by the 4th and 5th shots fired almost simultaneously by our boys. Another she-devil shot her way to our breastworks with 2 large revolvers, dealing death to all in her path. She, too, was shot several times with no apparent effect. When she ran out of ammunition, she pulled out the largest pig stucker I've ever seen. It must have been 18 inches in the blade. When the corporal tried to shoot her, she kicked him in the face, smashing it quite severely. Then she stabbed 3 boys and was about to decapitate a 4th when the lieutenant finally killed her. Without doubt, this gal inflicted more damage to our line than any other Reb. If Bobby Lee were to field a brigade of such fighters, I think that the Union prospects would be very gloomy indeed, for it would be hard to equal their ferocity and pluck. Our regimental losses were about 6 killed and 10 wounded, including Lieutenant Colonel Black, who was slightly wounded, I believe, in the thigh. Please give my regards to all inquiring friends and love to the family. Your devoted son, Robert Audrey, 111th Illinois Regimental Volunteer. So, Eddie, in this story, as you read, he talks about a handful of Southern women who were shot countless times but still charged forward and were still fighting even after being riddled with, in some cases, 5 bullets before they actually fell. A story lost in the sands of time if it weren't for the political cesspool. And stories like this that give me great honor to present Confederate History Month, to say the least, they fought with the tenacity and a spirit the likes of which you can't get out of, you know, a paid mercenary. They were fighting, as Stonewall Jackson said, to protect their home and hearth. Only when you're fighting something so near and dear to you would you charge into certain death for such a cause.
You know, James, one of the reasons she might have been fighting so hard is she's probably tired of being raped. You know,
I know we got into that last week, and I got an email. And to set the record straight, I think you said, you know, every Southern woman was raped, which was a little bit of a exaggeration, to say the least. And we did get a good email about that. But no, it did happen.
Sure.
It did happen. I don't know if it was quite as prevalent as it was in the Soviet, you know, what the Soviets were doing to the German women. But it did happen. I mean, to say most of them or half of them, a little bit of exaggeration. We want to keep everything as factually sound as we can. But there's no doubt that there are documented instances of you know, I guess to be raped by the North would have been a blessing compared to some of the methods that the North used upon women and children during that war.
Well, you know, James, I would respond to that by saying the victor writes the history, and I'll let the victors have their version of history, and I'll maintain my own. James, I'd like to mention one thing. I'd like to say something just real quickly. I'd like to say hello to some of our fans out there. I'd like to say hello to Lee Cochran and Ron Miller and Sherry Crawford, who were out there. They were at the Jim Tucker meeting last night, who spoke on Agenda 21 and the Bilderbergers. I'd just like to say hello to them. We have a lot of loyal fans out there. We certainly do. And how much time we got now, Jim? James?
Wrapping it up, but we're coming back.
Okay, listen. Okay, well, hey, when we come back, I'm going to tell y'all some of the stuff about what would our Union dead say if they could rise up and...
America has lost her way, lost her mooring, forgotten her direction. What once protected us from leftist theories and cloud-borne wish lists of egalitarian quacks and crackpots was that our principles and values were grounded on experience, what actually worked. As settlers built new political societies from scratch, from the ground up, America was based on personal responsibility, our right to manage our own affairs without the dictation of central planners or a distant bureaucracy. But we're losing that foundation. We're losing our liberty. At www.truthbasedlogic.com, we offer arguments for which the enemies of traditional America have no answers. TruthBasedLogic.com exists to help us better understand, defend, and restore the heritage we are losing.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Following up on what Eddie was just mentioning, yes, indeed, before the break, and I know we got cut off there by that last commercial, but what Eddie was saying is that he went to a meeting last night featuring Jim Tucker of the American Free Press, who is famous for writing his firsthand accounting of the Bilderberger meetings over the years. And anyway, Jim Tucker was making a public appearance in Memphis last night. Eddie went there not as an official representative of the show, but just as an attendee, and a great number of the people there in the audience, which numbered about 100 people, I believe, knew who Eddie was, and they knew about the show, and they were regular listeners. So, Eddie, I don't want to divert too far because I know this is our last night to celebrate Confederate history. Of course, we celebrate Confederate history every night on this show, every month of the year, but as far as the official Confederate History Month celebration, this is our last night until next April. But quickly recap the reception you got there, and were you surprised that so many people there, just a random meeting, people you hadn't met before, were fans of the show here in Memphis?
You know, I was very surprised, James. As a matter of fact, you know, I was surprised. I knew we were going to be a few people. The three people I just mentioned, I figured that they would be there. You know, Lee and Ron and Sherry. But Mitchell Morris is also there, too, and was very friendly. You know, Mitchell Morris is he's active, and I don't know anything he's not involved in the patriotic community. He's, you know, a Campaign for Liberty. I think he might be to attendee of the Libertarian Party, but he was really nice. He really was. They were very cordial. And I tell you what, that I was surprised. You know, we have more fame out there than I thought. We have a lot of supporters out there. Now, a lot of them are afraid, James, you know, for the obvious reasons, but we know they're out there. And I salute them.
That's right. Eddie walks to a meeting last night and gets the rock star treatment. Lots of people coming up to glad hand him and announce their support of the show. And God bless you, folks. We're glad that you're out there and hope that you're tuned in tonight. Great report from the front lines from Eddie the Bombardier Miller from the Jim Tucker meeting last night. Now, I read one letter in that last segment from a Yankee soldier to his father talking about how they had to shoot these women, these Southern women, 4 and 5 times because they were just fighting with that much tenacity. This is a far more touching letter. This letter that I'm about to read to you will bring into sharp focus just how far we've fallen from the 1930s, which was when this letter was written in 1933. This is a letter. It's a real life story. It's real life history that I think you'll enjoy listening to me share with you. It's a letter from the comptroller of the state of Florida that accompanied a Confederate veteran's pension check to the great-grandmother of a listener of this very radio program, who by that time was a widow. December 20th, 1933 was when this letter was issued. The language praising the ideals of the Confederacy are words that would never pass the lips of a state government employee today or of a politician today. The difference in attitudes of public officials between the date this letter was written, December 20th, 1933, and now is very staggering. But this is what it read. And again, this is an official letter sent out to the widow of a Confederate veteran, and it contained her pension check that she was drawing from her husband, who had served in the armed forces of the South during that war. And it reads this: State of Florida Comptroller's Office, Tallahassee, December 20th, 1933. And it's addressed to Mrs. Sarah E. McGeehee of Tampa, Florida. And this is what the Florida Comptroller said. Dear friend, I consider it quite fortunate on my part in being selected as the official charged with the responsibility of mailing you the enclosed pension check. It is a rare privilege and a pleasure to forward to you this token of appreciation of the great state of Florida. I sincerely wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a surprisingly Happy New Year. Personally, I feel the debt of gratitude owing you by the Commonwealth of this state cannot be estimated in material wealth, and therefore cannot be composed by mere payment of money. It is a liability that cannot be expressed in dollars, but it can be enshrined in the sacred archives of tradition, and by teaching the succeeding generations that by your actions, experience, and devotion to a sacred principle, you have proved that God does not force us into deep water to drown us, but to cleanse us, and that adversity is the trial of principle without which one hardly knows whether or not he is honest, unless, like those who fought for the Confederacy, he is sorely tried, smelted, polished, and glorified in the furnace of our tribulation. If we remain true to our ideals and steadfast to our principles, as exemplified by those who fought and followed the stars and bars, we are reminded that honor is likened to certain herbs and flowers. They send forth their most delightful odors only after they have been crushed and broken. Therefore, we should, all of us, profit from the experience and example of you brave souls who have conquered discouragement and despair and have, phoenix-like, risen from the dead ashes of destitution and want to the heights of honor, peace, and tranquility. May the one in whose honor we observe Christmas comfort and keep you. Very sincerely, J. M. Lee, Comptroller, State of Florida. Again, many thanks to Political Cesspool listener Stephen McGeehee for bringing this stirring letter to our attention, and I believe we featured it last year as well. But Eddie, again, that was a letter written by an official representing the state of Florida. It was poetic. I mean, when you're reading that, it was almost like reading Shakespeare, the level at which people could communicate even back into the 30s. But listen to what he's talking about. He talks about the honor of those who fought for the Confederacy, the ideals, how people need to remain true to the ideals of those who followed the stars and bars. He talks about Christ. He wishes her a Merry Christmas, and so on and so forth. You know, none of that would pass the lips of any state government employee today, certainly no politician, but that was a letter written to the widow of a Confederate veteran from the state of Florida, December 1933. Beautiful letter. And as one of our listener writes on the website, it dates from a time when there did exist such an institution as public service. Yes, and anyway, Eddie, your thoughts on that letter?
Well, first of all, James, you mentioned something. What jumped out at me right off the bat was the skill and penmanship, the skill in writing this guy had. You would never ever see that come out of a government school now, James. You would never see that skill. Like you said, it's like Hemingway or somebody, you know. And also, the guy was not worried about being politically correct. His attitude then that he showed toward the South and toward the ideals that the Southerners fought for were still strong in those days, and people did not worry about being politically correct. It just shows, James, that the success that the internationalists have had in dumbing down and brainwashing our young people with these government schools. I mean, people coming, white kids coming out of a government school nowadays, James, they've been taught to hate their own race, to hate the Confederacy and to the ideals that it stood up for. James, if I have time, I'd like to just mention one thing we talked about last week. I would like to ask the people out there to envision, what do you think would come to mind if some of the dead Union soldiers could rise from the grave and witness what's happening with their great victory that's happened, that they won? Here we have, I read a story on the internet just today about a four-year-old girl who was forcibly ripped apart from the arms of her mother to be frisked down in an airport because the TSA goons, the lowlifes, said that they saw a handgun, a pistol, being passed from the grandmother to the four-year-old. As the four-year-old was going with her mother to board a plane going back home from visiting the grandparents, the little four-year-old, as babies will do, ran back to hug her granny one more time. And the granny gave her a little doll, something like that. Going to break. Okay, folks, I'm going to continue the story when we come back, okay? It's a good story.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
For too long now, those whose ancestors carved from a vast wilderness an awe-inspiring extension of Western civilization have been without any semblance of political representation. Abandoned by the political establishment, we now face the prospect of losing our national identity, culture, and our way of life. But there is hope. There is still time to right these wrongs. And there is a vehicle to organize our people into a force capable of reclaiming America's destiny. The American Third Position is that vehicle. It's a political party for our people, led by extraordinary patriots like Bill Johnson, Kevin McDonald, and myself, James Edwards. Our ancestors, from the gates of Vienna to the sands of Iwo Jima, sacrificed their all in order to secure Providence's most precious gift, freedom. Now it's our turn. Learn more at the American Third Position website, American3P.org. That's American, the number three, the letter P.org. This is the American Third Position, American3P.org.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Are you looking for literature from authors who aren't ashamed of their European-American heritage? Are you looking for books that don't shy away from the forbidden facts? You used to look all over the internet for these books, but you can now find them all at the same place, LighthouseLiterature.com. Whether you're looking for rare classics from the great thinkers or the latest and most popular books from guys like me, Lighthouse Literature is your trusted source for the best books at the best prices. For a limited time, you can get my new book, Racism Schmacism, from Lighthouse Literature for only $10. When you make a purchase from www.lighthouseliterature.com, you're helping support dedicated real-world advocates and activists. So, what are you waiting for? Surf on over to LighthouseLiterature.com, a bright light for the right.
Thank you.
get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You know, again, as we celebrate Confederate History Month, as we wrap up our celebration of Confederate History Month tonight, you know, again, even in our very best efforts, we can only give you a very light sampling of everything we'd like to cover, and hopefully it's enough to interest you to go and read more and learn more about the South, because truly what they fought for is worthy of celebration each and every week of the year. But we showcase it here on this program every April, because April is Confederate History Month. But, you know, one thing about Confederate history is that it doesn't change. It is what it is, and it was what it was, and it's not open to interpretation. It's not a fluid thing. It's something that happened in history. And so, therefore, some of our previous year's installment of Confederate History Month, if you haven't heard them yet, are just as timely today as they were then. And when I think about the Confederate History Month tribute series that we do every year, I always look back to April of 2007 as our banner year. That was the last year that we were on the radio Monday through Friday. You'll remember in 2008 we got picked up by the network and we were syndicated, and that's when we moved to the weekend format on Saturday nights, and ever since then it's just been one day a week, Saturday nights, syndicated nationwide. There you have it. But back in 2007, we were still on the AM dial here in Memphis, Monday through Friday. And so, therefore, you had five times the amount of Confederate history information you could work into a month. And just, folks, I was listening to some of these old shows today in the broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. If you go there and you go to the archive page and you go all the way back to April of 2007, that really was our showcase of showcases in terms of bringing on a Confederate guest or guests with a great knowledge of all things Confederate. And I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of some of the people who appeared as guests on this show in April of 2007 for that year's tribute to Confederate history. Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo, an author of many books, including The Real Lincoln, A Look at Dishonest Abe. We had, of course, Sam Dixon, who wrote the book Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln. Clint Johnston, who was the author of a very big book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the South. We had a gentleman by the name of Scott Harris on the show, who was the director of New Market Battlefield. And if you're not familiar with that battle, cadets from the Virginia Military Institute fought alongside the Confederate Army and forced the Union general and his army out of the Shenandoah Valley in the Battle of New Market. So a little-known battle that we give you more information on. David Duncan was on the show, a high-ranking official with the Civil War Preservation Trust. Waite Rawls, the executive director of the Museum of the Confederacy in Richmond, Virginia, the former capital, he was on. Many, many others were on during that month. Dr. Thomas Naylor, professor emeritus of economics at Duke University, he was on to talk about the nobility of secession. So there you have a professor from Duke University talking about the nobility of secession only on the political cesspool. We also had Richard Flowers, who is the curator of Beauvoir, which is the Jefferson Davis Home and Presidential Library located in Biloxi, Mississippi. That should sound very familiar to many listeners of the Political Cesspool, because, of course, last month we had our first quarter fundraising drive, and those who gave $100 or more received a piece of the tile of Jefferson Davis's home, his slate roof. And, Eddie, I believe you received one of those as well.
Yes, it is.
Got it in your pocket? Richard Flowers, anyway, the curator of Beauvoir, was on the show that month in April of 2007, as was Senator Glenn McConnell. South Carolina Senator Glenn McConnell was on to talk about the legacy of the crew of the CSS Hunley. Glenn McConnell from Charleston, talking about the history of the CSS Hunley. You know, people always like to talk about the Confederates as being ignoramuses and all people from the South are stupid. Well, we're so stupid that we invented the first submarine to ever sink an enemy ship in naval warfare. And we had a state senator that year in 2007 on to talk about it. Folks, this is just a sampling. Dr. Michael Hill, the president of the League of the South, was on, as was Dr. David Bush, the director of the Johnson Island Confederate Prison in Ohio. That was a very interesting interview. Dr. Mark Thornton, that's four straight PhDs there in April of 2007. He is a PhD from Auburn University, and he was discussing the causes and effects of the war for Southern independence. Folks, that's just an overview of the guests that we featured on this show in April of 2007. Ladies and gentlemen, that truly was one of the most memorable months that we've ever had in the Political Cesspool Radio program's history. If you have been intrigued by our flyover of Confederate history here this month, you need to go to the broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And ladies and gentlemen, immerse yourself in the audio archives of April of 2007. I've been doing it myself a little bit today. Folks, it was a magical, magical month for any of you like me who appreciate Confederate history. And, you know, we were talking about Senator Glenn McConnell and the Hunley. As I told you, Eddie, and I believe I shared this story, I was there. I was there when they had the burial of the Hunley crew. You know, after the Hunley sank the USS Housatonic in Charleston Harbor, the submarine sank. And for over 100 years, they didn't know where it was. They knew it was somewhere. Back a little over a decade ago, they found the Hunley. They pulled it up. And, of course, Lieutenant George Dixon and the rest of the crew were still entombed inside the submarine. After they blew up the ship, they couldn't make it back to port. They sunk. Of course, this was the first time a submarine had ever been attempted to be manned. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of precedent there. But they pulled them out, and they gave them a military funeral in Charleston, South Carolina, in 2004, and I was there for the funeral procession, and it was about 100,000 people showed up for that funeral. They lined the battery of Charleston from the harbor just miles down the road. To this day, one of the most incredible experiences of my life, to be at a legitimate and authentic, not a recreation. You know, we talk about these Civil War reenactors. This was not a reenactment. This was the last Confederate funeral that there could ever be. And I was there for it. And, you know, you see the caskets go by draped in Confederate flags, and then you hear them playing Dixie. A lot of people lost it. And it was absolutely tremendous. And we talk about that night on that show. I still got the pictures of me there. And they had you could go to the cemetery where the crew of that ship, that submarine, were being laid to rest. We waited for hours in line, and everybody was given a piece of cedar. And if you wanted to, you could drop a piece of cedar on the actual casket as it laid there waiting to be buried. And I did that, and I walked right up to the grave and looked down at the casket of George Dixon, who was the commander of that submarine, and dropped my piece of cedar right there on top of his coffin. And I guess it's still there, but. You know, I'd like to go back to Charleston just to see that grave again, because I haven't been there since then, at least to the cemetery. But, folks, that all happened in April of 2007. And like I said, because this isn't a topic that's going to change, when we do Confederate History Month in 2013, nothing new is going to happen with regard to the war itself. So you can go back to 2007. You can listen to that. Eddie, I wish you could have been there at that funeral, my friend.
I would have loved to have been there. You know, James, we need to go up there sometime. We really do, before too much longer. You know, before we went to the break, James was talking about the four-year-old that was being attacked viciously by the TSA goons in the airport. You know, it's just incomprehensible. It blows my mind. I wonder what the Union soldiers would think if they saw that nowadays, James. So the great victory they won. I wonder what they would do if they could go through, Gary, Indiana, Chicago, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, which you hear people talk about them, refer to them as rust buckets. I've seen photographs of them. They're grown up with the weeds. They look like they've been bombed out. They look like some of these cities in Germany and in Japan after the end of World War II. No one can live there. Even the blacks can't live there, let alone, God forbid, if a white tries to live there, James.
I got to say this. You look at Henry Ford's Henry Ford's actual office is they still have where the office used to be, and it's just there's no roof, the windows are all busted out, and there's grass growing in the room where Henry Ford used to sit as he presided over Ford Motor Company. You're exactly right. If you could go back to 1942, okay? If you could go back to 1942, let me make this point because this is incredible. Think about this. If you could go back to 42 and you could fast forward to 2012 and you look at Detroit and then you look at Hiroshima or Dresden, you would think, man, they got us. America lost the war because Hiroshima and Dresden have rebuilt because of their population. And Detroit, because of its population, looks like a bummed out, burned out burg. When we come back, it's all you, Eddie. I want you to finish this story. You know, basically what you're saying is the union could have seen the results of their meth. You know, would they have done it? I hope not. We'll be back. We gotta get out of this place.
Girl, there's a better life for me. Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T, that's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the final segment of the final show of Confederate History Month 2012. We have our intrepid correspondent, Peter Scoop Stanton, standing by. But before we get to Scoop, I promised Eddie the chance to quickly wrap up his thought. Again, folks, I hope you've enjoyed our sampling of coverage of Confederate History Month. Go back to the archives, April 07, if you really want to dig in deep. And I think we've had a great month. I've enjoyed this month's coverage of Confederate History Month as much as any since that year to be sure we've really had a good time. Very spiritual, very emotional. Eddie, quick wrap up on your commentary, and then let's send it over to Scoop, who didn't get much time last week.
Yeah, I got to hurry up because I don't want Scoop to get cut off. Yeah, like I was saying, we pulled up the photograph of Henry Ford's office. At one time, Henry Ford represented the absolute apex of industry. He was one of the most powerful men, not only in the United States, but in the world. I mean, and you can hear you got moss and grass growing in his office, what used to be his office. You know, people, blacks, let alone whites, can walk the streets in most places in the South, but in the North, you know what? The North, ironically, James, in the North is in a lot worse shape now than the United States, than the South. You never hear anybody refer to the South as the Rust Bucket. But now, or the Rust Belt. Now you hear people talk about the North being the Rust Belt. I mean, look, like I mentioned earlier, Gary, Indiana, Detroit. You know, Detroit, Michigan used to be, the car city. You know, they used to call them the Big Three. Now we have, at the taxpayer's dime, we have General Motors being bought with taxpayers' money and dismantled and given as a gift to the Chinese, to Red China, into Mexico and Brazil. We have Chrysler was bought up by the taxpayers' dime and shipped off over to Brazil into Italy. We have other, Ford Motor Companies. They're being manufactured all over the world now. The great great granddaughters of the Confederates and the Union soldiers. Their daughters, their great great granddaughters, are being raped in these government schools. Our currency has been taken over, where it used to be backed by something of worth, by gold and silver. It's been taken over by the international bankers, and it's no longer backed by anything. Our currency has just been debased so bad it's worthless. Our borders are wide open. We have veterans that can't get medical care in the VA hospitals. James, we have soldiers being, doing 3 and 4 and 5 tours in the Army now. I read the other day where something like, 50 to 60% of the soldiers now are on psychotropic drugs. They're committing suicide. What did the Union Army fight for? Is that what they fought for, James? I'd just like to ask. I wish they could come to life now. I would love to be able to talk to one and show them.
Show them Detroit, Michigan, and say, is this what you had in mind? To a great extent, and Eddie, I don't think you're jumping to conclusions here. I think, to a great logical extent, the results of that war are being experienced in places like Detroit right now, and then we got to get the Scoop.
James, as we both talked about, and I know Scoop knows too, after the World War One, the First World War is what did England in. They never recovered from that war. I'll maintain you, the United States has been going downhill since the War of Northern Aggression. It's never been the same, George. Christianity's been ripped apart. It's just the country is just a cesspit.
Well, we held it together until the 60s, but once they officially, with Brown versus Board, I guess in 54, once they completely did away with the Constitution in 54 and only accelerated its death in the 60s. We were able to hold it together even after the defeat in the war. But after they did away with the Constitution in the 50s and 60s, that was it.
And make no mistake, people, the South, the Confederates were fighting to preserve the Constitution. Do not let anybody tell you another lie about that.
All right. And that being said, Peter Scoop Stanton, you're on deck, my friend. What do you got for us tonight?
Good evening, James. Good evening, Cesspool family. For Confederate History Month, I just want to let everybody know in the D.C. area, Saturday, May 5th, they're having something over at the Fairfax Battlefield somewhere in Fairfax City, Virginia. Unfortunately, as a good correspondent, I don't have any other details other than on Saturday, and yours truly will be there. Just look for the fat guy with the wallet on a chain.
So they're having a pro-Confederate shindig in Fairfax, Virginia, you say, Scoop?
Yes.
Wow.
If you go to, Google Washington Post, they should have something on it. I apologize for not having the information, but I'll forward to you, James, and you can post on the blog. An interesting thing I've encountered earlier this week, I was at Walmart buying some work boots for work purposes. And I was
imagine that
for a long, long time to check out my one item. In front of me were an immigrant couple, not from Europe, for making a purchase, and they're being held up by due to the use of a WIC check. WIC is an acronym for Women, Infants, and Children. So these two people from God knows where came off the boat and went to the local Postal Service's office to pick up a work check, whereas I was I had a pair of work boots to go to work to earn some money so I can pay for this immigrant couple's food. Pardon me. Then earlier today, my wife and I were out grocery shopping, providing provisions for ourselves and our daughter, and another group of immigrants from, not from Europe, I'd say from south of the border, they were speaking Spanish, had gallons and gallons of milk in their cart, and they were going over the WIC voucher. And I just want to say my blood was boiling. I was saying to myself, twice in a row, I'm going, you know, making purchases with money out of my own pocket, and these people are coming to our shores and get riding the gravy train. And to boot, when my daughter was first born, I went to the county to ask for some assistance for daycare so I could go to work as well as my wife. And it turned out we made too much money. And the person from the county told me we made too much money. And I said, well, say I was an illegal immigrant, I met the income threshold. Can I still get benefits? They said, well, yes, you can, because we don't ask about immigrant status. So that's my week in a nutshell. James, back to you.
Well, I know Eddie's struggling with his headset over here. For whatever reason, Eddie's not getting good volume in his headset tonight. But I read you loud and clear. And basically what he was saying, Eddie, is that if I hear you right, Scoop, you went to buy a pair of work boots for, of all things, your job. And essentially while he was in line to check out at Walmart, which we know produces the dregs of humanity, even though I show up there from time to time. I mean, they got good deals, but... he was held up in line an atrociously amount of time by some good Irishmen who were using their WIC card, you know, to get all the freebies and all the goodies that the government gives Irishmen. And so basically while Scoop was in to buy work boots, these other people were in and holding up the line, bickering over the amount of free taxpayer money that was supposed to be on their WIC card. And... how did that make you feel, Scoop?
Oh, I was just absolutely tickled knowing that, you know, I had to get up and work at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, think about it. Think about it. You go to work at 4 o'clock in the morning every day. You bought those work boots so you could go to work every day and pay for their WIC subsidies.
Right. And then and it didn't only happen once this week. It happened twice.
Ah.
I was in a different store. I'm not going to give the name of the store, but it's a middle road market store for middle class people. And a group of good Irishmen speaking native Gaelic were buying tons and tons of milk. In their hands was the WIC voucher.
I like that one time I can remember. We put up this... this receipt on the cesspool site, it was like a scanned image of a receipt that someone found up in, it might have been Michigan. And it was like, what was it? It was like $700 worth of porterhouse steaks that were bought on a WIC card, supposedly. I mean, I remember that. Anybody remember that? So that's what the, you know, that's what they were doing. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, so again, and this goes back to something, I'm glad you brought me all the way back around the clock, Scoop, because you know, back in the 60s, and Eddie got here after I talked about this story during the second hour, but I was talking about that inspirational video we have featured tonight on the website, Walking on Air, and it's got all these time-lapse images from the International Space Station. You know, back in the 60s and 50s, you know, people aspired to reach for the stars. And ever since the 60s, you haven't really heard as much about the space program because all of the you know the funding that could be going to produce astronauts are going to subsidize the third world here in America and to bring them here.
James, you bring up a valid point. I wanted to mention last week, but I was cut short. The Discovery came into Washington as going to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum out near Dallas Airport. It was a big to-do. NASA 747 was flying around town, but it just shows you like we've stopped. We had the internal combustion engine, transcontinental railroad, and all this other things, and now the space program's going away the Pony Express. And meanwhile, you know, housing projects are open for business.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, it's a reallocation of resources, the shifting of America's capital from things that it should be investing in to, frankly, things it shouldn't. That's not to say that we want these people to starve or we want ill will, but they got to do it themselves. Folks, they're playing our credits. Out of time tonight. Hey, next week, folks, Eddie the Bombardier Miller is going to be back with a report from the Jim Tucker Conference, so stay tuned on that. God bless you. Happy Confederate History Month. We'll see you next week. I'm James Edwards on behalf of my entire staff and crew here in Memphis and in Utah. We love you, everybody. Have a great night.